And if we have in the Middle Ages this strange and wonderful picture of an aristocracy ruling political matters, but this aristocracy also containing the priests, and the priests ruling human affairs generally, in the unification of theology and philosophy, religion and philosophical metaphysics, then we see this great state of the development of the human mind where it was in a shelter. From this shelter it broke out when the metaphysical systems blew up by Kant's inquiry into the question, is metaphysics possible at all? And his practical answer, no. Since then we have the modern situation, which seems to be similar, only in a more frightening degree, to the one our great philosophers had been in, namely the capability scattering, broken apart, without any real working relations. And yet the chance of bringing about a working and functional constellation of them was already there with Socrates. He made it possible for Plato to create, and then Aristotle, to create the first working constellation, which was an autocratic one, not a free one, but still preserving in it this first victory of human freedom that up to Plato had been made, preserving it in religion as well as in philosophy. If it had not been preserved, our inquiry would not have been possible. The two first metaphysical systems revealed how in those systems, autocratic systems, pyramidical systems, frameworks of thoughts, closed systems of thoughts, there was already the danger of mixing things permanently up. This was also a great chance. The chance shows in Plato and Aristotle. Plato is the first and still remains the greatest artistic metaphysician, or one could even say metaphysical artist. Aristotle is the first scientific metaphysician, or one could even say the first metaphysical scientist. Both expressions would in them be interchangeable. So near had things come together again, in one flash. And that way they helped each other for a certain time, till they finally blew apart and got mixed up altogether after the 18th century. It is the great adventure of the human mind we are considering here. And the men we take as models are the heroes, the main heroes of this great human adventure, and I didn't want to leave the others out entirely as Plato and Aristotle, so that you might at least say that this is not discrimination what we use here against metaphysicians. They have been bitterly necessary for the development of mankind. Yet the chance to create a real functional constellation was missed as soon as Plato opened his mouth. And it had to be missed, because Plato was forced to go this way. He saw, it was all a political question at that time, he saw one thing most clearly, namely, that those daring men, if he had known them, all nine of them, he considered, would never have, the other seven, Jesus didn't escape his death, Ezra would never have escaped their death, if people had been aware enough of what was happening. The Athenians were aware enough of what was happening, and they knew why they killed Socrates. Socrates was not that harmless dope Xenophon wants to make him. He was really most dangerous for the Athenians, politically as well as he seemed to be most dangerous for the masses of his time, for people who still were clinging to the rest, to the remainders of myths, and couldn't be asked to be really inwardly free men. It were not only the Jews that cried, "Crucify him." It were the Athenians too. And all peoples in the world of that time would have cried, "Crucify them," all of them we are considering here, if they only had known. Plato knew that they had not known, that they only knew when they were Athenians, and that they had their good reason to kill Socrates. And he became afraid that no development of science, art, philosophy, and he cared for them all. He was a good scientist, he was a splendid philosopher, and he was a great artist. He had those capabilities all in himself. Also the capability of love for his fellow men, because he loved Socrates more than any student ever loved his teacher. That none of those capabilities would prevail in those circumstances if a system would not be created and a kind of halo put around the head of everybody who wanted to go on with this research in every field. He was the first who fashioned this halo and put it around his own head. At least he did not get killed. And it took a long time till the church killed Giordano Bruno. Till then they were fairly well sheltered. Plato was a clever politician too. One could say that he was the politician who did most for science and philosophy and art in order to survive at all and to be recognized by and by the people. So all that is no accident, but so to speak, law of the human mind in its own development. When it meets the circumstances historically given, Socrates would have laughed at that. As Jesus does not answer the grand inquisitor who tells him the same story, that human beings shouldn't be free, that one shouldn't dare it, Jesus in Dostoevsky's story only kisses him. Socrates would have laughed at the idea that Plato would create such a shelter, because he would and must have known that was losing the straight way to truth. And he was ready to dare everything for the way to truth. Plato himself dropped out of politics. He knew he would be killed if he went in for it. Socrates always was in politics. If we read the Platonic dialogues, it seems that if Socrates is a man, who always tried to keep the youngsters of his Athens back from engaging in politics. But he does no such thing. He just wants to prepare them rightly. What Plato makes of him, namely the philosopher who warns them and says, don't concern yourself with those questions, they are unimportant. Care for justice, truth, courage, wisdom. This is a distorted picture, because Socrates himself never refused his services to the free community of Athens. He did not go in for politics at his time, because he knew that what he was doing was the decisive thing that had to be done for politics right now, namely to find a way to educate free citizens for a free republic that became a free republic without free citizens. And logically, he did not refuse politics for himself. He kept it to a minimum. When he was called upon, he went. First, he was a warrior. He was in battles for his state. And he was very proud of it. And he was a good warrior. Second, he was two times in politics. And they were the decisive turning points of the first free republic of the world, Athens. They show in what danger the republic was. The first time he had to defy the oligarchs, the 30 tyrants of Athens. Oligarchy had overthrown democracy for a short time, and some of the oligarchs were former students of Socrates. He's accused of that, as you see and have seen in the trial. And those former students of him tried to involve him in the deeds of the tyrants, the 30 oligarchs. A man who was their enemy was to be murdered. And Socrates, they tried to take Socrates into the plot and make him one of those who had to carry out their wish in order to nail him to their party. And Socrates, he mentioned it in his apology, refused. If the 30 tyrants had survived a little longer, they would have killed Socrates. The second time, he was defying the so-called democracy of Athens. When the assembly of the whole people tried to make use of the usual musical superstitions of Athens to accuse the admirals who had not gathered up the drowned sailors in a battle, because they wanted to get rid of them for political reasons. They belonged to the oligarchic party. Then he was chosen to be one of the judges. And all voted for the death of the admiral, except Socrates. And then the whole assembly rose against him, the whole mob, and he still took to his opinion. And he mentions it in his apology. He says, if I had gone really in for politics, I would be dead long ago. Look at those two instances. But those two instances are absolutely typical. They show him as a man who, abiding only to the laws of Athens, of a free republic, in order to hold them up, has the courage to stand up against tyrants as well as against anarchy, against the mob. Plato calls him the great statesman of Athens. He was not that. He was more than a statesman. He was a citizen. He was the first man we see in the world who proved by his deeds and by his arguments that he had realized that in Solon's laws and Solon's republic there was a fault, that Solon was relying entirely on the old solid customs, that means on Homeric religion, that he could build a state of free citizens because they were instinctively citizens. They were held in boundaries by religion, by their mythical religious beliefs, by the old customs of their fathers. As soon as the Athenian Republic came into a state as we have it now, namely where the guarantee that people will not cross the borderline set to human beings by a religion or a metaphysics believed in, when the sophists came up and everything could be argued and proved to be seemingly true, and the morals broke down, then the fault of Solon became clear, and Socrates was the only one who saw it. Namely that, in order to make such a free republic that gives human beings the possibility of developing their free personality and live as human beings and become creative, can only prevail if the citizens understand this thing, and if they really use the republic only for this one purpose and not for the purposes of their social interests, regardless of the laws of the community. He made of himself, seemingly retiring from politics, this model citizen who showed in two classical examples how in such a situation a free citizen can stand up against the mob and against the tyrants. His practice shows that permanently he tried to educate the youngsters of Athens in just this way. He had always also a political purpose in educating them, making them citizens as he was, because he knew that was the only means to make this great event of humanity, the Free Republic of Athens, prevail and stand. Then, accused finally and threatened by death, as you can read in the dialogue Crito. His friends think that he should be concerned with saving himself. Plato, who was not present, as he says himself, thinks so too, if we look at his later dialogue. They all could not understand why this man did not run away when he had the possibility to save himself for the sake of philosophy. But he did not run. He stood there standing for the same thing he had stood for when he defied the mob and the tyrants, namely for the law of Athens. When he argues with his friend Crito, telling him, "Don't you understand that I am a free citizen of Athens. I have accepted the laws of Athens. They gave me the possibility to develop my philosophy, to do my work, to follow my call. Now just we have unjust judges now who mistreat and misuse the laws of Athens. I should commit an act by which I would defy the laws themselves, not me. And he reminds him how free the constitution of Athens was. He tells him, I not only accepted him when I was them if I wasn't when I was not grown up. There is a law they ask you when you are older. Do you voluntarily agree to the laws of your city? And I did. I have made up my mind. That is almost an American position, so to speak. Namely, that a constitution is to be freely agreed upon, and a citizen is a man who joins a common purpose and joins it consciously as a full-grown human being, obliges himself. Socrates doesn't want to break that, but he has, because he wants to preserve the laws of Athens and with them the free republic. But he has a more clever reason too. He means, what can I do outside of Athens? Here the Greek speaks, and especially the Attican men, the Athenian. He knows perfectly well that if Athens cannot suffer Socrates, no other country can. When they tell him they are friends in another city, yes, he said, there will be friends, but what can they do for me? I cannot pursue my task. If Athens refuses me, I am at an end with my creative performance. I cannot do what I set out to do anymore. It is hopeless. It would be ridiculous. And it would play the game of the enemies, because then they could say Socrates didn't care for the laws of Athens. We judged rightly, we applied the laws of Athens to him, and he broke them. He wanted to die that they might know that they had broken them, and that the laws should be upheld. It was a useless death as far as Athens is concerned. But what it was a most useful performance in death as far as the world is concerned. Politically, every time when the question of rule of the mob or rule of despots or tyrants comes up again, Socrates is rising again and asks the question, don't you know how to handle both? If you want to be free men, as well as the whole age of metaphysics long, from Plato to the 19th century, it happened again and again that a metaphysician, being absolutely sure to have the truth, stumbled over the figure of Socrates, who suddenly popped up asking him, are you really so sure? Are you really so cocksure that we can have the truth? And the metaphysician paled. The last one who heard this word was Kant. And it encouraged him to do his own research on those lines. And then suddenly Socrates came fully to life again as a philosopher. So he lived by his death and by doing exactly what he did. He was killed because he was himself. And by killing somebody who can be killed only under the pretext that he is himself, and that is the only reason. That seems to be the only way to make him immortal. They made him immortal, and they knew it soon afterwards. Plato, coming from the aristocracy in Athens and knowing only too well a few years later that everything was lost, did not care to work this position of Socrates really out, because he believed now that this map that turned up everywhere till the Roman Empire came and put it into an iron cage for a long time, that this map could not be guided except if it gathered first respect for the leaders. And so he tried to make kings philosophers and almost lost his head by it when he tried to reform the Dionysus, the tyrant of Syracuse. And then he tried to make philosophers kings. Though, and there he succeeded. He made philosophers kings. At least prophets, the hidden kings of all history that was to come, the experts in spirit, the ones that behind the scenes could rule and still give a certain guarantee. So decisive was this turning point, because at this moment we lost the essence of everything that had been gained up to then, because Athens was the first free community. Here, the spirit of all our thinkers could have developed and had developed. If this republic could stand, then we could have had, instead of Plato, the next free philosopher, and the constellation, the working constellation we are after, the free constellation and creative constellation between all the human capabilities, could have been brought about in this community. Because it needs a community. And that is what Socrates also knew. He who discovered to the full the value and the qualities of the human person and stood for it, he was not an individual. He knew that decisive steps in creating justice, for instance, he was most concerned about, can only be made in a free community. That what he would ever be able to talk about justice when he were out of Athens in strange countries wouldn't mean a thing. That actions counted here, and that the community must be there, that human beings must work together in order to guarantee themselves to be free personalities. Otherwise, none is possible, except in the dream world of absolute inwardness. And Socrates did not care for inwardness. He didn't want to close himself up in himself. So that might be a creative performance too, and was very often. He was not the man for that. He knew that this community had to stand, and more.